Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
Good afternoon. It's another fantastic Wednesday in South Central Alaska. We're going to have a good show today, so hang with us. Hopefully my voice will. I have three guests today, all of them gentlemen. I have here in the studio a former state official with the Knowles, Palin, Murkowski, and administrations, former journalist, currently unemployed, but useful pundit, Larry Personally. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Nellie.
Also with me, Malcolm Roberts. He's a coordinator of Backbone 3, which we'll get into in a little bit. And he's been a longtime assistant to Governor Walter Hickel, and help start the group Bridge Builders in our community, which many people are familiar with. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nellie.
And on the phone from the sunny city of Fairbanks, Merrick Pierce is here. He's on the he's a member of the board of directors of the Alaska Gasline Port Authority and a member of Backbone. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Nellie. It's very good to be with you.
So are you guys holding all the keys to the sunshine today?
Well, I don't know how cloudy it is in Anchorage, but we're sure enjoying some beautiful weather in Fairbanks.
Yeah, I keep seeing that on the television, and I probably move back in about three more days. Okay, Malcolm, let's get to Backbone. What is it? Just briefly, so that we can bring people up to speed here.
Yes, Backbone is a grassroots organization of Alaskans formed in 1999. You may remember, Nellie, there was a big merger going on between BP and Atlantic Richfield, and it would have included ARCO Alaska, the Alaska section of that company. If that had been completed, one company, BP, would have controlled over 70% of the North Slope and nearly 75% of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. So a group of people got together. They were Democrats, Republicans, Greens, Alaska Independents, all longtime Alaskans, some of whom had fought and won for our statehood for us. And we're very, very concerned about this. We waded in, and with the help of others, we were able to convince the FTC to file their largest lawsuit in their history, $1.2 billion. In a couple of weeks, BP divested ARCO to Phillips, now part of ConocoPhillips, and it retained some of the competition at the North Slope. That's how we started. We've had several evolutions. We disbanded after that one and started up again.
Which would be Backbone 2.
Backbone 2, right. And this was when Governor Murkowski was negotiating with the producers to build a gas line. Again, there were a number of Alaskans who were concerned about the nature of those negotiations and the terms of the proposed contract. So we waited in on that one, too. And then we've continued to follow the issue through the Palin administration. We supported her efforts for creating the Alaska Gasline Inducement Act of just over a year ago, and then her battle to raise our taxes on oil and gas and what she called the ACEs approach. And we have tracked this issue very closely. And then more recently, we can get into where we stand more recently with Backbone 3.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Larry, I just wanted to get to you a little bit. You have a long history in Alaska, and you've worked on a lot on economic issues for the state professionally and as a journalist. And you're kind of an expert on our economy and our politics. Is that?
Well, or at least a self-proclaimed expert.
Well, I said it first, so I guess
thank
it's
you.
Not too self-proclaimed.
But yes, I've for 32 years either reported on it or been involved with public policy issues in Alaska, particularly of late, of the last 10 years, fiscal issues, oil and gas.
And you're going to be a guest this week on Anchorage Edition with me.
Well, I may have a scheduling conflict, but we'll work on that. If not this week, we'll
take
try
care.
Another week.
Yeah.
Anything to sit next to Paul Jenkins again.
And Merrick, you own your own business in Fairbanks?
I do, and I serve on the board of directors of the Alaska Gasline Port Authority, and I want to make it very clear that I'm speaking on my own behalf today. With nine members on our board of directors, we want to make it as easy as possible for our very capable and competent project manager, Bill Walker. to make the case for the Port Authority. So we let him speak formally for the Port Authority. But the Port Authority was created in 1999 by three voter mandates in the city of Valdez, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and the North Slope Borough. And it has a voter mandate, pretty straightforward, to build or cause to be built a gas pipeline from the North Slope to Valdez with liquefaction facilities in Valdez. And you know, that's what we're working very hard at doing. And we're right in lockstep with the Alaska voters. And if you've seen the and following the hearings on the TransCanada proposal, you'll see that the Alaskans are overwhelmingly testifying and telling their legislators that they want to see the Alaska gas pipeline built. And that's quite consistent with the last Dittman survey that came out that found that about 80% of Alaskans are strongly in favor of having the Alaska gas pipeline built to Valdez.
Okay, well, thanks. I wanted to come back to Malcolm now. And in the promo for the show, we talked a little bit about an ad that was proposed that Backbone 3 had prepared and circulated to a number of people urging legislators to vote no on the TransCanada proposal. Let's talk a little bit about that ad. People have kind of heard about it. It's been pretty controversial for some people, and we'll go from there.
Right. Well, Backbone 3 strongly believes that Alaska should maintain control of our gas, that we should build our own infrastructure and keep control of it and not export it into a foreign country, however friendly. Canada's probably our friendliest neighbor. But they have a very appropriate respect for doing things for their own people, what's best for them. And we think we should do for the same for us. And we were concerned that the debate seemed to be between two different Canadian pipelines. One, the TransCanada proposal that the Palin administration supports, and the other, a producer proposal. So the big fight was over two Canadian pipelines. Well, we totally disagree. We reflect what Merrick was just talking about. The vast majority of Alaskans who say, no, we don't want either of these Canadian pipelines. We want an Alaska line. So we did an ad built around that premise. And we urged legislators to vote no on TransCanada. And we made a couple of lists of people, of those who are well known in our history or today, who have stood tall for Alaska gaining and controlling its own resources. And I know it's unusual in a radio show, Nellie, but I brought in a big copy of this ad so you'd look at
it. I can see it very well.
Okay. Well, you can see the column on the left. Mm-hmm. That represents people who fought, and Governor Hickel is our chair of Backbone 3. He fought alongside those like Bob Bartlett and others mentioned, who were determined that we keep control of this, our legacy, that we won at our statehood to be able to build a state that could stand on its own feet, that didn't have to depend on others. So Bartlett's mentioned, and then many others, including the 138,000 Alaskans who voted for an all-Alaska gas line in 2002, and a number down the list. I think those are really interested in this ad. If they get on the internet, they could probably find it now someplace. Mm-hmm. The other list on the right are those who support Across Canada Pipeline. And, of course, that's the producers, and it also includes the AGEA, the Palin Gas Line team. Now, as a few of us were brainstorming this, we think, okay, now who's always supported this gas line team? And we made a big mistake, and it was my fault. We included Bill Allen and Vico, who always supported the Canadian line. We included the Corrupt Bastards Club. I don't know if I can say that on KSKA.
It's been said, yes.
Okay. But these were other groups who supported a cross-Canada line. So we put this list in, and we put it in the ad. Well, we sent it to all legislators in advance, and we immediately had some strong reaction, and rightfully so, that by putting these corrupt individuals, some of whom are in jail already, next to some very fine people who just have a difference, happen to have a different opinion from ours, was wrong, because it somehow implied that these other people were corrupt, which there was no intention to that. I immediately wrote an apology to Marty Rutherford and the AGEA team, and we changed the ad. It never appeared in print like that, except on some blogs who got the earlier draft and stuck it out there. But that was incorrect, and we corrected it. And then at the bottom of the ad, there are two maps, one that shows the All-Alaska line going from Prudhoe Bay down right through the spine of Alaska, right at the, along the right-of-way of the oil line, with spur lines off and straddle plants, so that we could use that resource in-state, not only to meet our needs, which is our primary market, but also to create value-added jobs of turning those gas and the gas liquids into other products that really is the key to a beyond colony economy. Mm-hmm. And the other map shows the Canadian alternative.
Yeah. What occurred this week is, of course, going on at the same time as our legislators are meeting in a special session to consider the TransCanada proposal, the gas line license, if you will. And has this, do you think, hurt or helped this whole, you know, few days of having that ad out there that incensed a lot of people? I know there's been an apology, but it seems like it's been a kind of a, had to be a rough few days for you guys.
Well, actually, it was a rough 24 hours when, for me anyway, when I realized the mistake I'd made and to correct it. And I got a number of hot letters and things from a number of people. But I think the message is getting through. We're facing a decision, and I hope all your listeners get into this, because this is an issue that touches all of us. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like the oil line changed Alaska dramatically, the gas line will too. And it's absolutely vital that we keep it in state. We keep it within our boundaries. And that is it's up to all Alaskans to raise their voice, let their legislators know where they stand. And so I think this this ad, and now that it's been improved, we stand by every word of it, and we believe strongly in the message. And we hope that Alaskans will rally and speak to their legislators, who have to make an awesome decision.
Mm-hmm,
this,
yes.
This is a tough decision.
And this is a time for our listeners to participate, get some answers to some questions if we can give them. This is a live call-in program if you're listening in the afternoon. Our local number, 550-8433. That's 550-8433. And if you need a toll-free, it's 1-888-353-5752. And Mr. Peter has set up my email. You can email me at communityforum@kska.org. Larry, personally, let's talk about the All-Alaska route. It's, you know, had a number of sort of incarnations and a lot of discussion. What's your take on the All-Alaska line at this point? Is it a possibility?
Well, sure, it's a possibility, but it's not the best possibility. It's not the most probable possibility, and respectfully disagree with the backers of it. It's not the most profitable possibility for Alaska. As Malcolm said, the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline changed Alaska fundamentally, but it wasn't the steel pipe that changed it. It was all the money that flowed into the state from tax and royalty revenue from the oil, and a pipe that goes through Canada to the vast lower 48 market in the United States, from the Pacific Northwest to the Southwest to Mid-America, Mid-Continent, upstate New York. That pipe would produce more money for the state of Alaska than an All-Alaska line. So, sure, a gas line would be another fundamental change, but again, not the pipe, which way it heads, how big it is, but the revenue it produces. One thing, my thought, though, on the ad is, since when did Canada become a dirty word in Alaska? I got to admit, I'm offended and have been in recent years as backers of All Alaska Line, in an attempt to promote their project, have turned Canada into a member of the Axis of Evil. It's just, you know, the pipe is going to go through Canada, and then the gas will be dispersed from there, either in new pipe or existing pipe. But just because Alaska gas is moving through a pipe in Canada doesn't mean Canada controls the gas. The gas is controlled by the owner until that owner sells it, and then the buyer controls it. So I think we need to do this on facts, not emotions. But I think the economics of the All-Alaska line, trying to export Alaska gas or move it to the U.S. West Coast where there's a very small market, I just don't think it works.
Merrick Pierce, did you want to jump in there? I don't want to leave you in the cold because I can't see you. You are on the phone in Fairbanks. So did you want to comment, follow up on what Larry had to say?
You bet I do, Nellie. Let me set the record straight. We argue from facts and not from emotion, as Larry indicated. We do have the most profitable project for Alaska. And I have to emphasize that the project that returns the greatest net and present value to Alaska is the project that actually gets built. And we have the project with the shortest pipeline. We have an 800-mile-long pipeline that, if you go through the GEA documentation, you can see that our project gets built years ahead of any project that may or may not go into Canada. In fact, if you get into the details of looking at the Trans-Canada proposal through AGEA, you'll find that the Canadians have until at least 2018 to decide if they'll even build the project, and that's just flat unacceptable for Alaska. And I think what it helps, Nellie, for everybody to hear is just the basic facts, and let people make up their own mind based on the facts. And if you go to the North Slope and you look at the estimated reserves in the North Slope Basin, there's, according to the Department of Natural Resources, 234 trillion cubic feet of estimated reserves in the North Slope Basin. If we were to sell our gas into the premium Japanese markets, and Larry, you haven't been dialed into what's happened recently, but we have a growing consortium with the Alaska Gasline Port Authority. Big companies like Mitsubishi, it's the 127th biggest company in the world, smart company, they know what they're doing. You've got Sempra LNG out of Lower 48, and these companies are part of this consortium. And if we take and ship some of Alaska's gas, or all of our gas, into the Japanese market, just for comparison, where we can earn over $20 per MMBTU for our gas, the total value of the North Slope gas is worth almost $5 trillion. Now, if you compare that to going and sending our gas into the closed Lower 48 market, and I'll explain that a little bit more in a minute, the gas is worth only $2.5 to $2.8 trillion. So let's think about what CIRA has recently said. When they looked at the Lower 48 market, there's massive gas discoveries that have been made in that market, in the fractured shale deposits in the Rockies and in the Appalachias and in Louisiana, just massive gas discoveries which have changed the whole economics of building a pipeline into the Lower 48. You just can't amortize the debt of a $50 billion pipeline into the Lower 48 market. So CIRA has basically said that market is closed to Alaska's gas. So it goes right back to the All-Alaska Gas Pipeline that the voters have mandated be built. That is the project that can be completed the quickest. It has the most gas takeoff points for Alaska. In fact, if you go to mygasline.com, Nellie, there's a good website. We've laid out a map that actually shows what our project looks like. And you can see all the gas takeoff points. You can see the exact route. And I have to say, by comparison, We can't get any of that from the TransCanada plan. We don't know what their exact route is. We don't know what their gas takeoff points are. And so the Alaska legislature is being asked to determine, you know, whether to vote yes or no on this deal, and they don't even know what the gas takeoff points are for Alaska. And at best, the Canadian gas pipeline would only give Alaska 5 gas delivery points, where the All-Alaska gas pipeline gives Alaska 18 takeoff points.
Okay, and as far as all of the details on the All-Alaska Gas Line route, all of those are worked out and available for public scrutiny?
Absolutely, yes.
And those are located on your website?
If you go to the DNR website, Department of Natural Resources website, they have the GEA applications that show exactly what the project is. In fact, let me just kind of cut to the chase. I'll tell you what our project is. It's an 800-mile-long pipeline. It's from the North Slope to Valdez, as the voters have mandated, and it's a 48-inch diameter pipe to Delta Junction. And we're obviously trying to allow for a T to be built at Delta Junction. So if someday a Canadian gas pipeline gets built, they just tee in at Delta Junction and head on into Canada. But from Delta Junction south, it's a 42-inch diameter pipe. The total project would cost about $12 billion for the pipeline component and about $8 billion for the liquefaction facility at Valdez. So it's about a $20 billion project.
Larry, what about some of the information that America's raised as far as the takeoff points? I know a lot of people are concerned about the horrendous price of fuel oil right now. I know after the barge gets to Kotzebue this summer, for 100 gallons of heating oil, it's going to be $600. And that'll probably last maybe 2 weeks in the winter.
Right, but Kotzebue is not going to see natural gas from an All-Alaska line or a Canadian line, if that's what you want to call it, to use the new pejorative term of calling something Canadian. If Kotzebue is going to benefit from gas, it's going to have to be some propane operation where propane is stripped out of an Alaska gas project and then barged over to Kotzebue. And that could be done with any project. You talk about takeoff points. Any pipeline bill that would put a takeoff point where anybody wants it, is willing to pay for it, and is actually going to take gas from it. Having a takeoff point is meaningless unless you've got someone who is willing to contract to buy gas delivered to that takeoff point. So getting a valve put into the line isn't the issue. It's getting an entity on the other side of that valve, a utility, saying, I'll sign a contract to buy X amount of gas for X number of years, and I need that takeoff point there, and you can deliver it. You know, talk about prices in Japan. Yes, prices in Japan or in the Far East currently are higher per 1,000 cubic feet for natural gas than prices in mid-America or anywhere else in the North American continent, for that matter. But just because people are paying more there doesn't mean you can assume you can sell Alaska gas there at that price. There's a lot of gas in the Pacific Rim. Sakhalin Island, Russia, Indonesia, Australia, East Timor, Papua New Guinea. There's a lot of gas on the Pacific Rim that can be delivered to Japan and the Far East cheaper than Alaska gas. So just because they may... You're always going to be the most expensive gas in the market, and someone's always going to be able to undercut our price because they don't have to pay for a $12 billion, 800-mile pipeline. Their gas is at Tidewater or close by. So I think the hurdles are still very, very high for Alaska. And just one last thing, everyone talks about Sempra. Sempra was a player with the Port Authority a few years ago. There was this big to-do. Oh, Sempra signed a MOU and Sempra is a partner. If you read the Sempra deal at the time, they weren't going to buy Alaska gas. They were just going to market Alaska gas and take a fee. Well, you can go find a marketer. To get this thing built, you need someone who's going to sign a contract and say, I will buy the gas for 20 years, come hell or high water, doesn't matter what the market prices are. You then take that contract, you go to a bank, and you get some financing. That's what we need.
You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today we're talking about the license that will or will not be issued to TransCanada by the legislature on Monday when they've decided to vote. And we're talking about the group Backbone 3 and their efforts in trying to get an all-Alaska gas line approved. This is a live call-in show if you're listening in the afternoon. 550-8433 is the number. Sorry, we don't sound very healthy in here, but we're going to make it. I wanted to get back to Malcolm to respond to some of the comments.
Yeah, well, thank you, Nellie. There's another option in the all-Alaska line, and I like the Port Authority proposal very much, and if it goes forward, I think it'll do the job. But there's another approach that Governor Hickel has forwarded, has been talking about since last November, which I think is the best of all options, and that is for the state to use its surplus to build the oil line ourselves, to build it, own it, use it as will best fit the needs of Alaska. That's the first most important role. And that could include the takeoff points or saddle plants, as they call them, to get propane made, to get it to the villages, where you don't have to just wait for a utility to come forward. But the state says, this is a priority. We can no longer leave the people in remote areas with no way to put gas in their snow machines, no way to get gas in their fishing boats. We're going to address this directly. And there's no question, if the state made this decision, Nellie, we could get started with the whole process in a matter of months. We don't have to wait for a company, however nice they are, like TransCanada, to spend months getting permits. They don't have the permits. TC is a whole new corporation, a spinoff of TransCanada, has to start from scratch. These permits exist for the All-Alaska Line, and the state could make the decision, build the line, own it, and get it going. And I believe in a matter of, Merrick, you might have a better hold on this, but I think we could probably have in about 7 years, instead of we're talking 2020, whatever, a gas line going through Alaska, feeding our needs, and then meeting, going to the world markets, which, having just been in Beijing, I have to disagree a bit with Larry in terms of where Asia is going in terms of their economy and their need for energy.
Why now? Why the full court press? I mean, we've heard, of course, about the All-Alaska Gas Line, but why haven't we been hearing this Backbone 3 thing consistently throughout the course of what the legislature is doing now?
Well, because almost all of us, this isn't, it's not a political organization, but almost all of us have backed Governor Palin. Mm-hmm. I mean, Governor Hickel was her co-chairman of her campaign, been very supportive, but and we haven't wanted to jump the gun. I mean, they didn't release their decision until May 22, just a little over a month and a half ago. So it wasn't until then that we knew where the process was in terms of whether the commissioners were going to approve the TransCanada application. And then we really didn't know where Governor Palin was herself until Governor Hickel and I met with her about 10 days ago, and we discussed it. I'm really not still sure where she in her heart feels, because she was an early supporter of the All Alaska Line, but she has established this process through a GIA, which was certainly well-intended. I mean, of the highest standards in terms of competitiveness, transparency, and so on. But the process ended up with just one nominee. I mean, it was just TransCanada got through the process. And I think that at a minimum, they should redo the AGEA process, get in other applications, and be a little more helpful, because four out of the five applications were just ruled incomplete and not considered, instead of working with them to see how. I mean, if you're a government like we are, where we own the resource, it's ours in common, yours, mine, Larry's, mm-hmm. Merrick's, every citizen here, we co-own this gas. So this decision really requires an activist government that says, let's do something together. Let's make it happen. And I'm sorry that Larry thinks our ad is pejorative towards Canada. It's not an issue of a certain country. I would say the same thing and write the same ad if we were putting a pipeline across the Bering Strait into Russia. You know, why Russia? Why build it across Russia? Why build it across Canada? Keep it in Alaska. Then we can control it. Then we can do the best for our people.
And Nellie, may I jump in, please?
Sure.
Well, thank you very much, Nellie. I just want to add to what Malcolm is saying. Is we have, and I was a strong supporter of AGEA, but we have very, very different circumstances today than when AGEA was first conceived. And what are those two different circumstances? The first is we have an absolutely devastating energy crisis, Nellie, that you talked about earlier. It's killing rural Alaska. You've seen the Institute of Social and Economic Research report. Thousands of people are coming out of rural Alaska because the cost of living in rural Alaska has just skyrocketed. And within the Fairbanks North Star Borough, we have a devastating energy crisis. We are paying literally hundreds of millions of dollars more per year because we do not have low-cost natural gas available here. We're buying fuel oil that's approaching $5 a gallon here in Fairbanks, and that's just devastating for homeowners here. We have no certainty because we don't know, maybe fuel oil is going to be at $6 or $7 a gallon before the winter's over, particularly if Goldman Sachs predictions are correct, that crude oil might go up to $200 a barrel. The other very different circumstance that Alaska has that buttresses Malcolm's argument that the state could just jump in and build this gas pipeline ourselves. It's critical energy infrastructure. That we've got a $10 billion surplus this year. We will have maybe a $15 billion surplus this next coming year. So that gives us $25 billion. It gives us a lot of power and a lot of leverage to get this pipeline going. And I go back to the question that Malcolm raised, how quick can we do this? Well, I've actually asked that question of the engineers, the people who actually do this on a daily basis. And, you know, we could literally order the pipe this year, and in 2010, that pipe could be coming off the mills. That's how quick we could start getting pipe shipped to Alaska.
And where would those mills be?
Don't know yet. We have a consortium that we formed with Mitsubishi, and Mitsubishi is a worldwide corporation with 45,000 employees, and they're into everything from metals to chemicals to pipelines and gas, and so there's lots of good sources of good quality pipes.
I noticed that when I had ConocoPhillips in here talking about the gas line, he was saying, well, you know, one of the issues for us is that at least back then, that was a couple months ago, there is no company in the United States that can produce the steel that we're going to need for this pipeline. So I think, you know, almost no matter which way you look at it, we're dealing with, you know, British Petroleum. We're dealing with, there's a foreign company. Foreign companies are going to build this steel. Why is this suddenly, you know, an issue, I guess, is what people are wondering, when there are so many other factors involved just outside of Canada.
Well, the issue is hot right now because a decision will be made next week.
Monday, maybe. Tuesday, Wednesday.
Well, I don't know which day next week. I guess it has to be made by August 3. But in any case, it's going to be perhaps the decision of the century in terms of our economy. That's why it's so important. And it would be a terrible mistake. It would just be, in my view, just like someone called it the Thelma and Louise solution, sort of sailing off, driving off a cliff together, to not grip this opportunity. We're an owner state. Build our own line. Do with it what's best for the people. And and there's another element of controlling the gas in state, and that is the value-added component. And Nellie, I'm sure Larry has been into the thick of this for years. We've always had this issue. Do you just ship out trees in the round?
Mm-hmm.
Do you just ship out fish and let somebody else make many times more dollars for fish by the way they prepare it? Alaska could take our gas liquids, and this particular gas that we have is very rich in these liquids, and these liquids are very, very valuable. They're the building blocks for people's contact lenses, for what we wear, furniture in our homes, the cars we drive, everything. These gas liquids are tremendously important. And, you know, the Agrium plant was an example of a value-added plant down on the Kenai.
Mm-hmm.
It produced fertilizer for the farmers of the world.
And they ran out of gas. And NSTAR's running out of gas.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how much the workers at the Agrium plant made on average? This is maybe a too remote fact, but it's a very interesting one. $80,000 a worker.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is a challenging technical job, and our young people need jobs in the state. I mean, we've spent...
Hold that thought.
Yes.
Hold that thought. We're going to go to the phones now. Once again, this is a live call-in program in the afternoon. 550-8433 is the number. And Tom, thank you very much for waiting. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Nellie. I'd hope that you could address some other issues here, and I think maybe you got it backwards here about voting against AGEA helping you with your pipeline, because I've been watching these sessions and listening to everybody's opinion and all of the information there, and it appears is that there would be no way in heck to get a export license unless and until the overland route was in there. And if you vote down AGEA, there's no way in heck that the producer, Denali Pipeline, is going to sell you their gas. And the only way you could get it out is if TransCanada builds a Y line. So I think, you know, I personally think we're going to waste the gas whether we sell it to China or we sell it to Chicago or Canada. It doesn't make a difference. We have no energy policy now, so I don't have a dog in the fight to get this, to get it one over the other, but I do think that we have to do it responsibly, and we have to be realistic about the options. And so I'm kind of concerned here that the whole picture isn't being put forward for the public, and I would think that if it was the All Alaska Line was viable, you could go forward just like Denali is going forward, irrespective of AGEA. But I think you need the AGEA component in there to have any hope of getting the All Alaska, the Y line, built, because the producer line, the Denali line, is going to be more expensive because the producers get a higher rate of return on their money that they put up themselves. The TransCanada line is a little cheaper because they can get government-insured loans, which are about 7 or 8%, as opposed to the owner equity, which we have to pay them 14% for their money. So I think, all things being considered, you couldn't get an export license until the overland line was built, and the TransCanada line would be more amenable to selling you gas and would be selling you cheaper gas because of the lower tariff, I think you should, you know, reassess your argument here, because I think you're shooting yourself in the foot. There are lots of good arguments about value added. You know, I sort of fear what would happen if an LNG tanker hit an oil tanker, but nonetheless, there are some problems any which way you go here. So
okay,
I'd like to get some feedback on those thoughts.
Okay, thanks
may
for
I,
your...
May I jump in, Ellie?
Yeah, quickly. Yeah.
Great. Well, okay, Thomas raised some good questions, and one of the things that I've challenged the Palin administration to do is in engage in a debate on this issue. We could do it on public radio. We could do it on any of the radio stations throughout Alaska, where you have the dynamic of argument and rebuttal so the facts can be brought forward for the people to consider. You know, one of the misconceptions that people have about this project is that we don't have an export license, and I'm sorry, but the fact is the export license for this project was issued in 1989. And when you look at the total volume, the total amount of gas that's available from the North Slope Basin, we have enough, if we took 2.7 billion cubic feet a day off the North Slope, for export for 237 years. So you're going to look pretty silly, folks, if you're going to go out there and argue that there's no gas, there's not enough gas for export, that somehow it harms national security. That is just nonsense, because there's just so much gas in the North Slope Basin.
I agree, but they won't let you export it until they build the overland line. I'm sure FERC would go nuts.
No, that's not correct.
Go nuts if you try to export it before you shipped it to, you know, to ship it to China before you shipped it to the U.S.
No, that's not correct. The best research that we have, it comes from Cambridge Energy Research Associates, has shown that there is massive new gas discoveries in the Lower 48 market, which have effectively closed the Lower 48 market to the shipment of Alaska's gas through a $50 billion pipeline. Okay, so you have to look at that dynamic to consider, you know, how likely it is that we'll be able to export our gas. And we have the existing export license. We're ready to go.
Okay, Malcolm has been wanting to...
Yeah, and this could be a real short answer. Anybody who wants a copy of the summary of the export license that currently exists can send me an email, Nellie, or they can send it to you. My address is mb, as in boy, Roberts, at gci.net, and I'll send you a summary of that export license that says it's good for 25 years from the sailing of the first LNG tanker, and it includes Japan, Taiwan, and Korea. So it exists. I'm happy to send it to you. A lot of people have raised this issue, but it exists. It's valid. It has not been repealed, and we can move forward with it.
Larry, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, I have not seen the license. I haven't read through the federal law behind the license. I question whether a license that's 20 years old is still valid, but even if it is, I would stake my house, my car, my life on the fact Congress will not let Alaska gas be exported. It's just the political climate in America right now, given the energy crisis people are seeing down south. If there's an effort to export Alaska natural gas before any of it comes here, you will see an effort in Congress to block it, just like they blocked the export of Alaska oil as a condition for the oil line. America is just not willing to see Alaska gas go overseas, why they feel they're paying too much for gas.
And I've got a rejoinder to that, because I happen to be in Juneau with Governor Hickel when he filed a lawsuit about that oil export ban. Within 2 months, Frank Murkowski, our senator at the time, got a bill through to repeal that export ban, because our case was so clear. It's unconstitutional to forbid one state to export a resource, only one state. And so that was the rationale. And the other thing is, I believe there's going to be an awakening in America to the fact that China owns something like $2.4 trillion of our currency. Everything that we are wearing and buying and so on comes from China. It's time that we need to become global players in this sense. And what we have, we can export and change and exchange with them. Now, the export license doesn't include China, but includes other countries that could get us started and certainly get it going for the next years. And I believe then there'll be an awakening in America. Our economy is going to go down the tubes if we just buy everything from China and there is no exchange to balance our balance of trade.
I noticed that this week that legislation came out that would require the major automakers to make 10% of their vehicles run on natural gas within 10 years. Is this something that Alaska Gas could be involved in and maybe help our own car builders in America, Larry?
Well, sure. You know, as and this gets into the carbon footprint, global warming, gas, natural gas is cleaner than oil. There's no question about it. So you see in big cities, buses run on natural gas. You see people experimenting more with trying to develop an affordable car and refueling stations for natural gas. I think there's no question on electrical generation. America would much rather burn natural gas than oil or coal. Let me go back just on quickly on a couple things. One, I don't think AGEA is going to work either. So just for the record, I'm not picking just on the Alaska gas line. I don't think AGEA is going to get us our gas line either. So I don't buy the analogy.
Well, what is going to get us our gas line?
Oh, I think
we want to hear the answer.
A reasonable business deal between the state and TransCanada, the U.S. government, the Canadian government, and the producers, because they have the deepest pockets. But I was going to say the analogy that this is Thelma and Louise, who died when they went off the cliff. I don't think AGEA is Thelma and Louise. I think of it as more of sort of Thelma and Louise 2, where instead of going off the cliff and dying, they just take a wrong turn, and they get lost for a long time.
Yeah.
And eventually, we're going to figure out the right road and
well said.
Come back.
Well said.
Other thing, in terms of using Alaska gas, natural gas. Sure, we want to use it in the state, and we talked about the $25 billion or possible, depending on oil price, $25 billion budget surplus. I think Alaska would be smarter off long-term using that budget surplus to build renewable energy projects in the state, hydro, wind, and everything, and sell that natural gas to someone out of state who's willing to pay top dollar for it. Why stake our own future on this non-renewable resource, use the money from the renewable, from the non-renewable oil and gas to pay for energy, to cover Alaska's energy needs long into the future.
Okay.
I
want to
may I jump in, Nellie?
Just a minute. I'm going to go to Chris real quick on line two. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hi there, Nellie, and hi there, Malcolm and Larry. Chris Constant here. My question is, in Hickel's perfect vision or perfect world of an Alaska route, what is the role of the producers? Is it just to sell gas into the pipeline, or is there some other more value-added way for them to be a partner with the state?
Yes. good question, Chris. We would like to see the producers be a participant. We believe if the state stepped up and said, we're building our own gas line, that they would commit their gas. This happens in countries all over the world. Now, here's a factoid of interest, Nellie. 94% of the oil and gas resources in the world are controlled by governments. Only 6% are controlled by Exxon and all the other oil companies. Now, what do they do around the world? The government controls the infrastructure. The government builds the pipeline, and then it invites the producers to use the government's pipeline. We are the sovereign. And in our case, it was rooted in the Statehood Act, as I mentioned some time back in this conversation. This is ours. This is ours. So if we say we want it to go this way, and we invite the producers in, there's a large plant that has to be built as part of this to get the gas ready to go in the gas line. They could build that part of it. And I believe that with that kind of a pipeline in place very soon, I think they'd get excited about doing more drilling and exploration and keeping both of our pipelines going and full.
You are listening to Community Forum on KSKA. Today we're talking gas. My guest today, Larry Persily, former state official and former journalist, is here in the role of pundit. Malcolm Roberts, coordinator of Backbone 3 and longtime assistant to Governor Wally Hickel. And in Fairbanks, we have Merrick Pierce, who is also a member of Backbone and a board member of the Alaska Gas Port Authority. Thank you all for being here. If you want to call in a question, we're running out of time very quickly. Our number is 550-8433. And I want to go to Mark on line 5. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. My question is actually for Mr. Roberts.
I have been engaging with in some discussion with my senator from Eagle River, Senator Dyson, and I'm a little bit confused, and maybe you can help me. I've heard a lot of chat today about the political climate and how that's going to affect our ability to export our resources to a foreign country. And I wondered if you could talk for a little while about the concerns that a lot of Alaskans have in regards to our natural resource being shipped into Canada, which is a foreign country, and what guarantees we would have that we would be able to safely deliver that gas where it might need to go.
Well, that's a very good question. The reality is that if TransCanada gets this license, they will have a whole lot of negotiating to do in their own country. There are 40 tribal groups called the First Nations in Canada who will have a say in every one of those negotiations. TransCanada will be negotiating with our money, because what they end up in resolving these conflicts will be part of the cost of transportation and removed from the wellhead, which affects our return as a state. When they negotiate with environmental groups, when they deal with right of ways.
So with the All Alaska route, everything is already
everything's
in place.
Here, and of course, we settled our land claims in 1971, so all that's behind us. And in fact, our native corporations, I see them part of this project. I see them, maybe they will build that plant at the North Slope. Maybe they'll build some of these saddle plants to produce propane to get to their people and colleagues and shareholders out in the rural areas. I see a whole Alaska effort working with this resource rather than Canada negotiating with all these other entities.
Is this realistic, Larry, in view of our current workforce and, pulling off a project this size by ourselves? Alaska itself doesn't have a lot of experience at building pipelines.
Well, we certainly built the oil pipeline. That was 30 years ago. No, there's no question that there are not enough welders and pipe fitters and operators in Alaska to build it, but we've known that for years. And international pipelines are built all the time with some local talent, and there is an itinerant trained workforce that moves from pipeline project to pipeline project. So I don't think getting it built is a problem. But let me get back to the Canadian question. I think, and this is, I don't mean to be offensive to those who believe otherwise, but this notion that somehow Canada is going to take our gas as it's moving through their country is just bogus. You know, there are ships and planes and trucks that move goods through Canada all the time. And there are international treaties, there are laws. The pipe, as it moves through Canada, if Detroit Edison contracts to buy gas from a producer on the North Slope, and there's a pipe that goes from Alaska through Canada through the Midwest to deliver that gas to Detroit Edison, there's nothing Canada can do to stop delivery of that gas to Detroit Edison.
Well, I think Merrick should have the mic, but okay. I've got something to add to it. Merrick?
Very quickly.
Yes, I just want to go back to the bet that Larry was offering in the House and the car about export. I'd love to take that bet, because Alaska has been shipping its gas, exporting its gas to Japan for 40 years, and there's been not a peep from Congress about that. In fact, that particular export license for the existing export to Japan was just renewed, not a peep from Congress. So, Larry, I'll take that bet with you any day of the week. I think the one question that needs to be brought into this discussion is about what might happen to our gas once it gets into Canada. Now, again, the lower 48 market, according to the best research that we have available, is saturated with gas. New discoveries all over the lower 48. So a lot of us believe that a lot of the gas that comes from Alaska will end up for the development of the tar sands in Alberta. And it is some of the most devastating environmental kind of development that you'll ever see. They're literally creating vast man-made lakes of oily goo that, for example, the migratory waterfowl that fly up to Alaska happen to land in these lakes now and again. In fact, I was in Canada, I was in Calgary about 2 months ago when they had a massive kill-off of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of migratory waterfowl that made the mistake of landing in one of these oily lakes. And, of course, it was front-page news all over Canada, but not a peep was heard about that here in Alaska. And that's something that Alaskans should be thinking about as we consider where our gas resources might go and how the Canadians might use our gas to develop their tar sands.
Okay, I want to go to Mark on line 6. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hello. I've got a couple of questions about natural gas use. We're talking here about this All-Alaska line coming online sooner rather than later, and the natural gas is currently used to pressurize the field on the North Slope. Are we going to be able to divert it? And second, how much of the natural gas will be consumed in Valdez to compress the natural gas, for exporting in a liquid form?
Malcolm?
I'd actually like to defer to Merrick on those two questions. I have answers to them, but I think he's a little closer to it. Merrick?
Absolutely. We have put in a 2.7 BCF a day, or billion cubic feet a day project, which is the only project that is consistent with the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission offtake limits from gas from the North Slope. And that's very important because, here's what happens. If you start taking off too much gas too quickly from the North Slope, you start losing your ability to recover oil. And with oil at around $140, $145 a barrel, you don't want to lose a drop of oil if you can avoid it. So you have to compare the realistic chance of the Alaska gas pipeline succeeding when we're consistent with the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission offtake limits versus the project that would go into Canada where they need considerably more gas than the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is allowing for offtake. Now, when you talk about the amount of gas that's used at the liquefaction facility in Valdez, that's all documented within our report that we turned into DNR. One thing we do like to point out is we have enormous advantages by having a liquefaction facility this far north. Of course, when you're trying to chill gas down to 260 degrees below zero, you have an inherent advantage in chilling that gas when you're in a cold climate than when you're in a warmer place like Trinidad, where you have to use a lot more energy to compress that gas down to the temperatures that are required for liquefaction.
I'm just starting to have this whole terrible nightmare about the entire North Slope of Alaska sinking because it doesn't have any gas or oil underneath the ground anymore. Okay, line 10, Joe, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Let me turn this up a little bit. On the question that the state of Alaska should build our own pipeline, well, when the state of Alaska gets too much involved in business, it is a really long, bad history. And the latest was is the fish plant. The state invested $50 million to help produce and process Alaskan products, and we all know the outcome of that.
Mm-hmm.
It cost us $30 million out of pocket. So if we were going to go into pipeline building business, it wouldn't be any different.
May I ask the caller a question?
Just a second. Let him finish, please.
Sure. Yeah, that's the way I look at it.
Okay, Merrick, we talked about this a little earlier, but go ahead.
You bet. Well, my first question, and I didn't catch your name, caller.
Mark.
Joe.
Mark.
Frank.
Thank you very much, Mark. My question, Mark, is do you get a permanent fund dividend check every year?
Do I get? Yes.
Yes, sir. Okay, and that's an example. That's a perfect example of Alaska ownership. All of us know that for almost 30 years consecutively, the Alaska Permanent Fund Corp, which is a state-owned entity, has paid out dividends to the people of Alaska, and we've grown the corpus of our fund to almost $40 billion. It's a tremendous success story. And here's how we did it. We have a board of directors that's very competent, who hire very competent managers in the private sector to advise us how to manage our assets. And so it works quite well. And I would envision that a state-owned gas pipeline would be done the same way. You'd hire the private sector to build it using a competitive bidding process, and it might even be TransCanada that's a low bidder. Who knows? Then you would hire the private sector to actually do the operations, the day-to-day operations of the pipeline. And that could work real well. And there's just tremendous numbers of success stories where Alaska has owned entities from anything from the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project, which is state-owned, came in under budget, is producing very low-cost electricity. It's 4 cents per kilowatt hour. It's a very successful project. You can look at the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. You can look at.
Okay, I think we got the picture. I think it's very interesting to hear all of these comments and all of the ideas that flow once the conversation starts. But I'm real interested in asking each one of you, if you were the king of Alaska and maybe even the world, how would you make this pipeline happen in the fastest possible way? And I want to ask Larry first.
Well, king, huh?
At least.
Do I get to be king for more than one day?
A day and a half.
Okay, so I have to have a day and a half. I think, let's see. State's got to be involved in it because, for all the obvious reasons, the producers have to be involved because they have valid leases on the North Slope that they're producing hydrocarbons from. They have the right to that property, and they have the deep pockets. They're the ones who are going to underwrite the financing. TransCanada, I think, has to be involved because you're politically, you're never going to get through Canada with it. I think the state, TransCanada, the producers, federal government need to sit down, and I know negotiate is an ugly word to some people, but negotiate out the risks and the reward and put together a commercial deal that works. And if it also includes a smaller spur line through Valdez for some LNG production as part of a bigger project, I think that's great. But I think we need to put the emotions aside and put aside what Alaska wants and start looking at what's feasible.
Malcolm.
Well, in due respect, we had a king who tried that. His name was Frank Murkowski. And King Murkowski put together a contract with the producers, so on, and he really gave away the farm. He just opened the pockets and said, I want a gas line and build it for me. That is not the way to go. If I were king, I would say, we're going to put down $3 billion. That's all it'll take to build the $11.9 billion pipeline from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez. We can finance the rest. The capital markets are eager to get into an investment like that where you have the flow of such a valuable resource. Then I would call in the producers and say, let's get this going. We're gonna get this gas line completed in a few years' time, and we want your gas, and let's be a model of the best pipeline in the world. Let's make our people proud. And let's get our resource going for the benefit of our people, not just money for state government,
okay,
but for the jobs that go with it.
Merrick, quickly. Sorry, you have to be
King
the
Merrick.
Quick, you have to be the quick king.
The quick king for the day. Well, I would use our massive new revenues, and I would build the gas pipeline ourselves. We would get a 14% regulated rate of return on our equity, which is a great way for Alaska to diversify your income stream. I would make sure Alaska controlled the timing, the route, the takeoff points. I would make sure we had gas, particularly to the interior and rural Alaska, as quickly as is possible. And we can do it. If the state owns this and jumps in and does it, we can have gas flowing through the northern region of the northern region of the pipeline within 5 years. I would use our state royalty gas as the first gas into the pipe. If the producers try to fail the open season for the upstream commitments, I would go ahead with the pipeline anyway. And I would tell the exploration companies out there, look, in 5 years, we're going to have a pipeline up and running. We've got a place to put your gas. We'll have rolled-in rates. We'll have open expansion. We'll have all the things that you're looking for. And so we'll get our gas. There's just trillions and trillions of cubic feet of our gas in the North Slope into that pipe.
Well, I feel like we were just getting warmed up, and now we have to quit. But I want to thank all of you for being here today, Malcolm Roberts, Larry Persily, and Merrick Pierce up in Fairbanks. I wish that congenial, collegial dialogue could occur on this topic, and the people of Alaska could make some money doing some work from one end of the state to the other. I think a lot of people are trying to figure out how to make it through a tough couple of years with the economy and the gas prices we're facing right now. And I have to get out of here, too, because I'll be knocked off the air in a few seconds, but I'll be back on the 30th with another community forum, and I'll see you then.
Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us, KSKA 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska 99508, or email us at communityforum@ksKA.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at ksKA.org/communityforum. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.